Are you ready to unlock a secret to youthful vitality? Meet MitoPure, the revolutionary urolithin A supplement from Timeline Nutrition. MitoPure ignites mitophagy, your body's natural anti-aging pathway. As we age, our cells can become damaged and dysfunctional. But with MitoPure, you can recycle these worn-out cells. MitoPure is a clinically validated solution backed by over 15 years of robust scientific research. Boost your cellular energy, enhance muscle strength and endurance, and even fight skin aging, all without changing your diet or exercise routine. I discovered MitoPure a couple of years ago after diving into the science of urolithin A. Since then, it's become a vital part of my wellness routine. For more information and to order, visit timeline.com/Hoffman. Use code Hoffman at checkout to receive 10% off MitoPure. Whether you're looking to support muscle health, enhance your skin routine, or invest in your long-term vitality, MitoPure is your scientifically backed ally in the quest for slowing down the aging process. That's timeline.com/Hoffman for MitoPure. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's an opportunity to field your questions. Today, I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our resident nutritionist. That's why we call it Q&A with Layla. You can send questions to questions@drhoffman.net. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
A little sad today. A little sad.
Because it's Halloween?
No, not because it's Halloween. Although, I mean, there are plenty of reasons to be sad. You know, the days are getting a little shorter. Pretty soon we're going to hit, daylight savings time will be over. It'll be getting dark earlier. Although I welcome not waking up in the pitch dark. You know, I like to get up at, 6:30 in the morning and it's still dark. So we'll have at least morning people will be happy. No, my sadness comes from the Yankees. Once again, I've lost my heart to the New York Yankees, who were down 3-0. To the LA Dodgers, my former team, because I grew up in Southern California.
And we have to remind our listeners, that is of the taping of this podcast.
Exactly. And you all know the outcome, because by the time you listen to this, it may be a fait accompli that the Dodgers have won the World Series. As of the taping of this podcast, there's one more bite at the apple for the hapless Yankees to pull themselves out of a nosedive and not be swept in the World Series. So I don't know. I watched these games and, I found that the playoffs were very, very exciting, both the National League and the American League playoffs. But, I thought that the drama was really paled in terms of the World Series. It was so one-sided that I've been really disappointed. So, baseball fan, it does color my day a little bit. You know, it doesn't send me into a severe funk. I don't know. Maybe this is a dress rehearsal for the presidential election. You know, some people are going to be pretty disappointed come next week. So that being said, other than that, I feel good. I'm in a good
mood. That's good. That's good. You feel good. All right.
Yeah. I'm not beset by, aches and pains and lethargy and, I'm pretty excited about life in general.
Let that be your biggest problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let that be your biggest problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we get to questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. I wanted to give you a little bit of a postscript and our audience a postscript on a story that we covered, I guess it was in May, okay? At that time, there were a bunch of stories about the hazards of vitamin B3 or niacin. And so, for background, niacin is the kind of thing that people used to take at high doses for cardiovascular disease. And indeed, it raises HDL, It lowers LDL. It dramatically lowers triglycerides mm-hmm. by double digits. So you would think that, I mean, for a while, this was considered a panacea for cardiovascular disease. However, they kind of ran into a big iceberg with a study that was done in 2013, I think, which looked at high-dose niacin in a new formulation mixed with something that could reduce the flushing. And they found that not only did it not reduce cardiovascular disease, although it did lower these, the numbers looked better, but it there was actually, early on in the study, there was a signal that it was somewhat increasing cardiovascular risk and had side effects. And, you know, we know that high-dose niacin can affect the liver. Got to be careful. There were lawsuits when the 8-week cholesterol cure was written by a guy named Kowalski back in the 1980s, I think it was. And he told a lot of people for cardiovascular disease, take high-dose niacin, you know, and people would flush and flush and flush, but they were, you know, this is like kind of in the pre-statin era. Well, okay, so it kind of, niacin kind of crashed and burned as a cardiovascular protective. And I don't think that's entirely fair. I think there might be a use case for high-dose niacin. But the problem has been is that we now have drugs that lower cholesterol. And those drugs are multi-billion dollar, if not multi-trillion dollar enterprises. And they've kind of superseded niacin, which is, after all, you know, it's a vitamin. So it kind of, in the Rodney Dangerfield way, it don't get no respect. So fast forward to this spring, when headlines like this began to appear, too much of this B vitamin could be bad for your heart. Heart disease, can too much vitamin B3 increase risk? And this was on the basis of a study by our friend, Dr. Stanley Hazen, H-A-Z-E-N, at Cleveland Clinic, who is a very good PR machine. So whenever he puts out a study, the media gobbles it up and kind of uncritically parrots his conclusions. By the way, he's the TMAO guy.
Which has been debunked since.
Which has been debunked. And then he's also the erythritol guy. You know, when people use Truvia, it has some stevia and it has some erythritol as a non-caloric sweetener, as a sugar alternative. Mm-hmm. He said that that was toxic to the heart. But then again, there have been, you know, doubt has been cast on that. His latest target is vitamin B3. And what he was saying is not, you don't have to go to those like 500, 1,000, 1,500, 3,000 to get problems that even a little bit more than you might get from a kind of an ordinary diet can cause, you know, when he kind of looked at the biochemical pathway where it produced something that was bad and concluded that too much B3 is bad for you. So a lot of the press, picked up on this. AARP writes, niacin side effects can too much affect your heart. This is from 2024. Excess niacin linked to increased risk of heart disease, and on it goes. Okay. So, new study just out. And this study comes to us from, let's see, what journal is this? Big study, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm opening the link. Mm-hmm. And the link is, that's the old study.
This is a newer study.
Oh, it's a new study. About. Okay, it's niacin intake and mortality, total in cardiovascular disease, in patients with cardiovascular disease. Okay? So now you would think, patients with they already have pre-existing cardiovascular disease. So what happens when they take niacin? And what they say here is that cardiovascular disease poses a significant challenge, blah, blah, blah. Dietary intervention therapy offers high cost effectiveness for treating CVD. Currently, there's limited research on dietary niacin intake and survival of CVD patients. They don't even give a nod to the previous study that, you know, they don't even acknowledge that there was a previous study that said niacin is bad, the Hazen study. This study aims to examine the association of dietary niacin intake with long-term survival in people with cardiovascular disease. And they looked at people in the NHANES study, National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which is a definitive database.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at over 4,000 patients. They gathered data from 2003 to 2018, which is, you know, which for an ordinary person, you know, that's only 15 years. And, you know, maybe you wouldn't see such a big effect. Like an ordinary healthy person, there's not that likely to die in 15 years. But someone who already has pre-existing cardiovascular disease, they're at risk, right? They're at risk for subsequent cardiovascular problems, and they're at risk of dying. And this is what they found. Participants in the highest quartile of dietary niacin intake were at lower risk for all-cause mortality, and they were also at lower risk for cardiovascular disease mortality. So I'm simply pointing that out. I mean, it's in defense of vitamin B3, because a lot of people are taking multis. A lot of people are taking B-complex. Mm-hmm. They may say, oh my God, you know, I just read in the, you know, news that too much niacin is bad, or, you know, too much B3, because this could also be in the form of niacinamide, which is kind of the other form, which just doesn't cause flushing.
Yes.
But in effect, what they're saying is that, au contraire, that the more niacin you consume, the lower the risk. Now, this is not an argument for people to take 3,000 milligrams of niacin per day. It's more of a dietary survey, you know, from food sources, you know, where people are getting their niacin, possibly from supplementary niacin if they take a multi or a B complex.
Yes.
But it's, I think it's a vindication of this. And I guess this points out too, you know, for our listeners, you know, be careful when you read an article on nutrition, because you might die of a misprint or misinformation.
Right.
You know, because
it's so true.
We live in a realm of controversies. And when you say settled science, you know, follow the science is evolving. And there are, especially in the field of nutrition, there's a lot of controversies.
By its nature, it is never, ever settled. Really?
So we need to question assumptions. And, you know, I wonder what the response by Hazen et al. At Cleveland Clinic is going to be to that new study, if at all, if he's going to address it, because it kind of flies in the face of his highly publicized conclusions. By the way, what I just shared with you will get no traction, right?
No.
Because it's not newsworthy. It's not like it's a dog bites man story, not a man bites dog story. It's not a scary story.
And for that reason, Hazen won't draw any attention to it.
Yeah,
if he has an agenda to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. You know, all those
interesting. Nice. See, all the vitamins, minerals, all of our micronutrients, how important they can be.
Yeah.
And here we are. Yeah.
Hey, we just did something on vitamin B2, which is kind of, you know, riboflavin, which is less well known, and its benefits, you know, along the same lines. All right. Let's a little business before we get to questions. Why don't we allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you? So, folks, listen up. Here it goes. As you know, it's important to me that the supplements I recommend and use are of the highest quality. That's why I stock the Protocol for Life Balance product line in my online dispensary, drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research, including a suite of supplements supporting your cardiovascular health, Clinical Cardio 6, Ubiquinol, and K2, MK7, and D3. This collection offers a powerful combination of targeted nutrients and botanicals that are known to promote optimal cardiovascular health by supporting healthy blood pressure, arterial flexibility, cellular energy production, neutralization of free radicals, protection against oxidative stress, and promotion of healthy vascular structures. For more information and to order, just go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance is an A-rated GMP manufacturer of premium dietary supplements. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. And we got some good ones this week, some thought-provoking questions.
Yes, we've got one in particular here from Lori. She sent us an article from a Midwestern doctor titled, the FDA's war against DMSO and America, the forgotten history that led to the FDA again and again keeping the things we most desperately need away from us. And Lori wanted to know your thoughts about DMSO therapeutically.
Okay. So you sent this along to me, and I started reading it, and I got, you know, after a while, it was like, wow, this is kind of long. I started to speed read it, and then in the process of speed reading it, I realized that it was a book, and it was I was about a quarter of the way through it. And what the book attempts to do is it attempts to portray DMSO as an example of a low-cost, safe, panacea-like treatment that has been suppressed by the powers that be, the FDA in cahoots with the pharmaceutical industry, and that this is kind of a case study in how natural products are deep-sixed by the establishment. Yeah. You know, and
just so our listeners understand, DMSO is dimethyl sulfoxide, which can be found throughout nature. It's present in many fruits and vegetables.
Right. In small amounts. In tiny amounts.
And it was first synthesized by a Russian chemist, Alexander Zaitsev, in 1866.
Okay.
And it was essentially forgotten until the 1940s when industrial chemists looking for more solvents were curious to see if this waste product from producing paper could be used instead of being thrown away. Oh my.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to think.
Yeah. It's a colorless liquid. And I actually have some familiarity with using DMSO because there was a condition for which DMSO was approved. And that condition was IC, interstitial cystitis, which is a painful bladder condition that is a type of bladder inflammation that is very hard to treat. And what I used to do is women with interstitial cystitis would come to my office and they would, lie down on my exam table and I would, place their feet up in the stirrups, like in an OBGYN exam, and I would insert an IV into their urethra so that they would get an infusion of pure DMSO into their bladder. Okay.
Wow.
And it worked. It really worked. Women were very thankful for this. However, DMSO has an interesting property, which is when you get DMSO, and I've taken DMSO orally, not, you know, intra bladder, let me backtrack for a second. If you apply it to your skin, because it is purported to have anti-inflammatory effects and for, you know, injuries and things like that. So, you know, I tried it out on like a sore muscle, and I applied it externally, and I could immediately taste it, which suggests that it was very rapidly can pass through the skin and into the bloodstream, and then hence you taste it, which is also one of its attributes, which is DMSO has thought to be used as a penetrating agent, so that if you, say, want to apply, I don't know, maybe a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, you know, to your sore, whatever, elbow. But maybe you're concerned that it's not going to penetrate deeply. Mix it with some DMSO and it'll go right through the tissue into the site of action and even into the bloodstream, bypassing the gastrointestinal tract, which is kind of neat. The only problem is that it creates a distinct odor in the recipient of the DMSO. And it is an odor that is very distinctive. It is garlic-like, but it is enough that if you were to take some DMSO and apply it to your skin and then get on an elevator a few hours later, you could practically clear out the elevator. I mean, you would be a pariah. So that kind of is a limiting factor to its use. The other thing that came up, and the book points this out that you forwarded along to me from this listener, is that in some animal experiments, it was thought to damage the eye. It was it had a adverse effect on the crystalline lens of the eye, you know, maybe accelerating the progression of opacity or cataracts. But that has been challenged. And in the book, it's alleged that this was an excuse to ban it. So there was this guy when I started practice in the 1980s. His name was Dr. Stanley Jacobson. He was at the University of Oregon, I think, Oregon Health Sciences. And he was the biggest proponent of DMSO. And he wrote books about DMSO as a panacea for inflammation, for pain. It's used for cancer by some doctors intravenously because it seems to have anti-cancer effects. Besides, it's maybe a vehicle that helps other things that they want to penetrate the cancer. But I think it's died on the vine a little bit because it is so pungent in its smell, it's in its odor. So it's one of those things that, you know, maybe some of our listeners will share, or some of our practitioners who listen and use DMSO, maybe they can share with us their experiences with DMSO, because I stopped using it. For this bladder condition, a drug was developed that is not really that effective. It's called Elmiron or Elmiron. And so, you know, drug obviously that's FDA approved takes precedence over this natural substance that's dirt cheap, by the way, because it's it's a plentiful byproduct of the paper pulp industry, you know.
And so it's touted as being effective for a variety of of challenging issues, which is really, it's considerable when I look at the list, for chronic pain, for wounds, for challenging autoimmune disorders. Lori's husband, she writes that my husband is now suffering from trigeminal neuralgia.
Ouch.
And she's wondering if DMSO might be helpful.
Yeah, you know, trigeminal neuralgia is one of the most challenging pain problems because it's not an inflammatory problem. It's a nerve problem. And I mean, I can't vouch for that, but, you know, if you're willing to put up with the smell, it might be worth a try. And trigeminal neuralgia is usually in the face, so you can apply it. It's the nerves that underlie it are fairly superficial, and maybe it could have an effect, but I can't vouch for that. But, you know, it's such a devastating condition that it might be worth trying that. I mean, I wouldn't try it if you know, stub your toe. It's not worth it to, you know, have to sequester yourself while the odor lingers. But, you know, for a really serious problem, maybe, but I can't vouch for it. I mean, I'd love to get some feedback from people who've used it or practitioners who continue to use it, because I think there's a little bit of an underground of practitioners who are using it both topically and intravenously for certain conditions. I just haven't kept up with it.
Lori, thank you for this very, very thoughtful question, and best of luck to your husband. Yeah, that's a tough one. Okay. All right. Just on the topic of trigeminal neuralgia for a moment, I remember Dr. Hoffman several years ago, we had a patient, a lovely lady, who she didn't come to see us for trigeminal neuralgia, but it was something she had in the past.
Yeah.
And it was fixed by chiropractic.
Oh, interesting.
There was a particular chiropractic therapy. Hmm. I wish at the time I had written it down so other people could have been helped by it.
Yeah.
But it's a particular maneuver or something that gone and never happens again.
Well, you know, I mean, classically, chiropractic is based on the concept, as far as I understand, that it works on the nerves, that it's working on the spinal nerves. And in this case, maybe there's some connection to the cervical spine, you know, of the neck, and this condition. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that would be in the realm of certainly an alternative approach. But again, you know, chiropractors who are familiar with this technique and have some experience in treating patients with this, you know, let us know. We'd be happy to hear from you on this.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, sometimes, you know, B12 shots, acupuncture, these are sometimes things that help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe alpha lipoic acid.
Yeah. Neurological. Neuropathy kind of, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andy sends us an email. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm a 75-year-old man. I've been using a combination of glucosamine, chondroitin, and MSM for several decades to protect my joints, and I've had
just
good
just
results.
Just like me. Yeah.
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 Just like you. There you go. So Andy's asking, I've heard a lot about taking a collagen powder supplement with maybe some vitamin C, hyaluronic acid. Would it be a good idea to replace the glucosamine, chondroitin, and MSM with a collagen supplement?
Yeah, that's like
the same or better.
That's like our BrightCore product, you know, the BrightCore collagen product, the Revive product. Okay, so lately I've become more interested in, first of all, collagen's been on my radar screen for a long time, but I just wasn't sure. For a long time, and you'll recall this, we used type 2 collagen for osteoarthritis because of studies done in the 90s. By actually, you know, a pretty mainstream rheumatologist that suggests that type 2 collagen, even small amounts, can kind of interfere with the whatever autoimmune process was occurring in osteoarthritis. So that, I think, has some science behind it. But then I wasn't sure, you know, I did use the type 2 collagen, but then there are people like taking all this collagen, you know, like these big vats of collagen, like a powder or, you know, or usually in a powder form. I'm now convinced that there really is something to it, and I've added it to my own personal regimen, which I'm going to dish on in an upcoming newsletter. I throw it into my shake every morning, and the nice part of it is it's several different types of collagen. So you have kind of a nice spectrum of the different types of collagen. Some are good for skin and hair. Some are good for joints. And then there's some hyaluronic acid, which also is plausible for replenishing collagen. And it was interesting. I just, you know, the Washington Post? Are you a big fan of the Washington Post? Or are you a little skeptical?
Not
about
at all. Not at all.
What? You don't subscribe to the Washington Post? A lot of people canceled their subscription this week. Well, the Washington Post ran an article with no politics whatsoever about supplements that people, you know, older adults should consider taking. And it had, you know, the usual, it had omega-3 and it had vitamin D and, you know, B12, you know, some of the classics, magnesium. But it also, it actually included collagen. And that's, you know, collagen going really mainstream. So my answer to the question, and I think yours would be, and I walk the walk. I keep taking glucosamine and chondroitin because the science that was laid down in the 80s and 90s, I think is valid, that it actually, it may not, you know, if you're bone on bone, it may not fix you, but it certainly can slow the progression of bone deterioration. But I also hedge my bets by taking some additional collagen because, you know, our joints are grinding away. Our skin is sagging. We, you know, our collagen is cross-linking and deteriorating. And I think it's a good bet to take collagen. And that's why I sought them out as a sponsor. I was very happy to have the message about the benefits of collagen now.
Yeah. I would take all myself, Andy. I would take all of them. And the other thing is, a couple of studies come to mind, and I remember them simply by their acronyms. Maybe Dr. Hoffman, this will jog your memory. I think maybe it was 12, 15 years ago, but I remember you referring to it in some writing, or maybe on the radio, the GUIDE trial, the acronym GUIDE, or the GATE trial.
Oh, yeah, GATE.
GATE, yeah. Was it GATE?
Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Where they talked about these particular supplements and how beneficial they were, especially glucosamine.
Yeah.
In this regard, with regard to like knee arthritis, for example.
So segue to this is MSM, you know.
Yes.
Mainstream media, right? It's MSM. It stands for methylsulfonylmethane. Which sounds a little like dimethyl sulfoxide, DMSO. It actually, they're chemically related, and they have similar pharmacological properties that can be used to treat conditions like arthritis. MSM is actually a crystalline derivative of DMSO, okay? So I think MSM is one of the things that we should be taking because it is a source of sulfur. Sulfur is essential for collagen. I mean, look, when you burn hair, you know, accidentally, like, you know, I have like, you know, hairy hands and arms, and I put my hand over the fire and like I singe my hand hair, arm hair. It smells like, it smells like sulfur, right?
Sure.
It's because skin and hair have a high sulfur content. These are sulfur amino acids. And MSM is a great source of sulfur at the very least, and it may have anti-inflammatory effects.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Andy, take them. Continue taking the glucosamine chondroitin MSM. It's kept you well for all of this time. Continue taking it at the collagen powder with C and hyaluronic acid. I think adjunctively it would be helpful as well. So,
you know, and I got to say that for all the punishment that I dish out to my joints, knock wood, you know, I'm very happy with the condition of my joints. Aside from a torn meniscus that I had once, and that was just an athletic injury. You know, when the when the orthopedist went in there using an arthroscopy, you know, a little scope inside, he said, "Oh, great! You know, you have plenty of collagen left, which is unusual for your age. You have a nice reserve, so don't worry. You know, you're not going to be bone on bone anytime soon." And you know, I attribute that somewhat to the I have been faithfully taking this. I don't think I've gone for a day without taking glucosamine chondroitin, MSM, in God knows how many years, decades.
Wow.
And now adding the collagen, I think, is going to give me an additional boost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Good stuff. All right. Great questions. Layla, I think it's time to flip over to side two.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, part two. Give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Gary writes, "I don't know about the truth or falsity of it, but I've heard that in the good old days, marijuana had about 2-3% THC content. And by contrast, today it's 15-25%. Not a user myself, but I wonder if you see any public health concerns."
Okay, let's talk about pot when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and you can send questions to questions@drhoffman.net. We've got some great questions this week. We want to fill up our mailbag for next week, so don't get too preoccupied with the election coverage. Send us a question. Take a few moments away from being glued to cable news. And send us a question, and we'll answer it for next week's Intelligent Medicine Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.